Final hour, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you on this Monday morning, broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Awesome stuff from Joseph Newgarden, joining us live in studio as he prepares for the final couple weeks of the IndyCar season, including the Borchetta Bourbon Music City Grand Prix coming up Labor Day weekend right here in Nashville, August 30th and 31st. Very happy to have him in studio, but let's get back to the Titans here. Titans coming off a win on Friday night. Hooray! Titans won a preseason game. They are now 1-1. Their final preseason game coming up on Saturday against Minnesota. And then you look ahead to the regular season, week one against Denver coming up on September 7th. Couple of other things I wanted to get to from Friday night's game. We talked about Cedric Gray and James Williams in the last segment a little bit. I think that draft class from 2024 actually is starting to come around. You know, Rand Carthon had plenty of flaws as a GM. More than were acceptable for him to keep his job, clearly. I mean, you look at the free agency that he had in his first year. You bring in, you trade for L'Jarius Sneed. That's the big one. But really didn't bring in a whole lot of quality players. You bring in Calvin Ridley, but that was about it. And then the drafts, you look back at the 2023 draft, and there's not a whole lot that came out of that. Like, Skoronski's starting to come around a little bit. But the 2024 draft class is actually starting to look like it could be the Titans' best draft class since 2019. Very, very low bar, by the way. But J.C. Latham, so far, his move back to right tackle seems like it's been a success. It's only the preseason, it's only training camp. But from what everybody said, the way he's transformed his body and the way he's approached right tackle seems like he is going to be a stalwart there for a long time. Tavondre Sweat, you like what you saw in year one. I'm a little concerned about how little he's been on the practice field so far in training camp. I understand that, you know, he had the abdominal issue, and then I guess he got his tonsils out or something like that and hasn't been able to be on the field. We'll see if maybe he returns soon. But later on in the draft, there were a lot of question marks of, all right, you took Cedric Gray, Jarvis Brownlee, and James Williams. Those three are now actually starting to look like players for you. They're not all going to be hits. Jaquan Jackson looks like he's going to be cut ahead of his second NFL season. But if you can get four defensive starters and you're starting right tackle out of that draft, again, it's a very low bar, but you start to feel better about the depth that that draft is building, because you had so many drafts that just built absolutely nothing. You got nothing out of the 2020, 21, and 22 drafts outside of Roger McCreary and Chigakonkwo. That's pretty much it. So it is good to see that at least the depth draft picks, the day three draft picks from that 2024 draft, look like they at least might stick around and give you starting level production for a couple of years.
Well, that's what happens when you stockpile bad drafts upon bad drafts. You trade your franchise wide receiver in AJ Brown. You let Derrick Henry walk out the door. And now it really shows what you had lying underneath the surface. So now the Titans are kind of having to rebuild from the stubs, starting with the centerpiece and Cam Ward, and kind of go from there. The good thing is Jeffrey Simmons is still relatively young. You have J.C. Latham on the right side, who you mentioned the word stalwart, at right tackle. You have Calvin Ridley, who 3 years left on the deal. Bryce right. Oliver, Alec Manner, Gunnar Helm. So there's a future there, but you just got to continue to draft well.
Right. You're starting to see the young players actually do what they're supposed to, and that's develop. Now, there's a long way to go. We've talked about how little depth this team has at a lot of positions. Like, you look at corner, it's thin. Even inside linebacker, we're talking about it as, all right, you got this trio of guys who all look like they can be quality players with Barton and Gray and Williams. But behind that, if somebody gets hurt, you're in big trouble. Edge is thin and not very good at the top. Defensive tackle, good at the top, but thin. Safety might be the only position on defense where you feel like you have some depth. On the offensive side, the offensive line, you like the top five. But if anybody goes down, you're in trouble. Corey Levin might be serviceable at center, but you don't really have a swing tackle. And how confident are you in Blake Hance or Andrew Rupchich to come in and be a solid guard for you if they have to? So offensive line's thin. Wide receiver's thin. Running back with Tajay Spears is thin. Quarterback, it's Cam Ward. And if Cam Ward gets hurt, your season's over. So at tight end might be the only position you feel like you have some depth at. So it is going to be a process, but the first step in building depth is hitting on your late round picks, because those guys, they don't have to be superstars for you, but they can't be complete duds. And that's what they were for three straight years. You're finally starting to see some of those young guys actually make plays, which is a good sign for the Titans as they continue this rebuild.
Absolutely. And I really love the when Gunnar Helm was drafted and when Elik Aiemanner, I thought both of those were steals in the fourth round. I really thought Aiemanner would go late second round, early third, and he ended up slipping to four, and I was shocked. And I think that is a great wide receiver piece that could eventually work your way up to being wide receiver two. I think I'm sky high on Elik Aiemanner. And then Gunnar Helm as well, the future of the tight end room, can grow with Cam Ward, serve as a safety blanket. And then if there's stability along this offensive line and you continue to add depth, good quality depth, I really could see this being a good thing for the team.
Yes, and this draft class is huge. I think 2024, you looked at it and said, all right, well, if Latham and Sweat can just be the guys we drafted them to be, you can call that a success and move on. But if you're getting more behind that, that's even better. This year's class is obviously massive. You made 9 picks. Not all of them are going to end up being players for you, but if you could make those 9 picks turn into a couple, like you said, the pass catchers are huge. And even a guy like Marcus Harris. I thought Marcus Harris looked good on Friday night.
Oh, yeah, showed the speed.
I'm not saying that he's going to ever be a starting cornerback for you, but if he can be an upgrade over Amani Oruwariye, who I thought was horrible,
which I think he already is,
on Friday night, like, that's helpful. Another player that I didn't write this down in the show plan who flashed on Friday night, Gabe Judy-Lally. I thought, like, he made some plays that you're like, all right, maybe there is a little more depth at corner or at nickel behind Roger McCreary. Again, I don't think Gabe Judy-Lally, former undrafted guy, is ever going to be a star for you, but he was getting his nose in there. He was crashing on the blitz. He was stopping the run. Like, I liked what I saw from Gabe Judy-Lally. So maybe you're seeing some of that depth start to grow, and cornerback is a huge one, especially with who knows what happens with L'Jarius Sneed.
I tweeted that out after the game about Gabe Judy-Lally. He's been getting a little run with the ones at practice, just depending on who's available, but mostly with the twos. Gabe Judy-Lally has been making plays all camps. Lots of great pass deflections, pass breakups, good in coverage. But here's the issue about the secondary depth is you have Jalen Kimber, who's running on the opposite side of Gabe Judy-Lally, who is an undrafted free agent, a rookie.
Right.
Now, granted, it's probably about as good a rookie undrafted signing as you could possibly make, but when your twos are both undrafted guys, that's the concerning part.
Yeah, and Jamari Harris hasn't made as many plays either, the undrafted free agent out of Iowa, but I thought he was solid in his late appearances on Friday night. He was the one who made the hit on Emory Jones on that fourth down, I believe, that ended up getting the ball back to the Titans late in the game. I do want to apologize. I said the Vikings and Titans game was Saturday. It's Friday night. Friday night is the preseason finale between the Vikings and Titans at 7 p.m. The Titans are on the practice field right now. We haven't gotten many updates, and no pressers today, so we won't hear from Brian Callahan or Cam Ward. We will hear from Brian Callahan tomorrow, and I believe that will be during our show, so we should be able to bring at least some of that to you live tomorrow as the Titans are back on the practice field at 10 a.m. tomorrow. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you. More to get to on the Titans and their preseason win over the Falcons on Friday night. We'll do that coming up next. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you on this Monday, a Titans reaction Monday after a 23-20 win over the Falcons in preseason game number 2 on Friday night. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you have thoughts, you can text or call. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Titans are on the practice field right now over at Ascension St. Thomas Sports Park, although it is a closed practice, so we're not getting too many updates, but I'm sure we will get some sort of reaction to what the Titans look like today. I think this is an important practice for the Titans. A lot was made about the 10-day road trip and, you know, was the team getting tired and were they, you know, getting fatigued by all the travel? And I know we talked with PK about, oh, they must be so tired from staying in their luxury winery hotel. I get it. They're not a single-A baseball team making 12-hour bus trips to spend 2 weeks on the road. But, you know, they were away from home. I'd like to see some juice, or at least hear that there was some juice out there at practice today. Cam Ward also has limited some of the mistakes over the last couple of weeks. Heading into that joint practice with Tampa Bay, remember, Parker, we were coming off the Sunday practice where Brian Callahan lit up the offense coming off the field, and the reports were Cam Ward went 5 of 13 in team drills and nearly threw a couple of interceptions. It seems like he has been progressing well. And that was a tough stretch. You had 3 joint practices, 2 preseason games. They kind of threw him into the fire there. And outside of a couple mistakes like the throwaway that didn't get out of bounds against Atlanta and the one bad throw against Tampa in the preseason game, overall, I think he's showing progress. But now you're back at home. You're back comfortable. Can he start to accelerate it a little bit as we head towards preseason game number 3 and the regular season right around the corner? I'd like to hear that Cam Ward is really starting to lock in and he's starting to become the guy who you can look at and say, yeah, that guy's ready for the Broncos defense in Mile High in week 1.
Yeah, and again, I mentioned the stat watchers are not having a good time looking at Cam Ward's performance, but I thought watching him and kind of rewatching some clips as well, I thought he's made good decisions. I thought that he's been accurate with the football. I honestly think the timing with his feet has been a lot better than it has been in practice. So there's plenty of good to build on. And he, again, that last throw to Ayomanner that was the slot fade, I thought it was the right read, just really good coverage by the Atlanta defense.
Yep.
So I think he's making good reads and tying it together with his feet. Now, can you hit a couple more explosive plays? Now, can you get the offense going a little bit earlier, which he did with the throw, the first throw to Ayomanner in the preseason game against Atlanta? Can you do that more often?
Right. And you mentioned that throw to Ayomanner. I thought that was his best rep of the preseason so far. Like the Calvin Ridley 27-yard catch against Tampa, he had all day to throw. Ridley just sat down in a hole in the zone. There was no one close, and he hit him. I loved seeing Cam Ward feel the pressure, step outside, and make an accurate throw on the run. Like that's what you want to see from Cam Ward. That's what you saw at Miami that made him so good. The feel in the pocket, the ability to move and make accurate throws on the run on time.
Making plays out of structure and making plays within structure. I thought he's done a mix of both in the very limited action that he's had in the preseason, and that has to be encouraging. Has to be.
Right, it is. It just hasn't been consistent enough, and I'd like to see more consistency. Like I'd love to see coming out of practice, Jim Wyatt does the observations from all the practice. And I don't know if we'll get a full one today, but he always kind of puts, all right, here's what Cam Ward did in practice. He was 5 of 7 in 7-on-7s, and then he went 6 of 11 in team drills. I'd love to see some higher completion percentage. Like, yeah, you want to see the throws downfield, but I'd love to see just a little bit more consistency from Cam Ward. And I get it, 2 of 7 doesn't really tell the story because he did complete a pass that I guess was backwards to Alec Ayomanner because I was so confused watching the game. I'm like, 2 completions. He at least completed 3 passes. They didn't count it. So that would make him 3 of 8.
One was dropped.
So there's 4 of 8. And, you know, the Ayomanner one down on the slot fade, like you mentioned, I thought it was a fine throw.
It was the right read.
It wasn't perfect.
Based on the concept, it was the right read. Just
right.
Good coverage.
He didn't drop it in the bucket like the Anthony Richardson throw we saw over the weekend. Like,
that was beautiful.
That was the kind of throw he would have needed to make in order to complete that pass. It was great coverage. So the stats don't really tell the story, but also you had 2 3 and outs out of your 3 drives. Like blame the first drive ending on Van Jefferson because, you know, it was a great throw. Was it a perfect throw? No, but it should have been caught. You're an NFL wide receiver. You catch that pass. So you can blame the first drive on that. The second drive, Latham had the false start on 3rd and 8, which I guess, you know, it makes you wonder what the play call would have been on 3rd and 8 because there's a lot more plays in the playbook for 3rd and 8 than 3rd and 13. So, sure, there. But the third one, you know, you miss two throws and you end up punting on 3 plays again. So I'd like to see some consistency in practice and then carrying that in. I want to see one good drive on Friday night against the Vikings. And I know that fans going out to the stadium, it's probably going to be hot. You don't want to go out there and only see one drive from Cam Ward. But if he can go down and just get you points, like even if it's a field goal, just show consistent, move the chains, and get off the field, I'm good with that. You don't need to see any more.
How much do you want to see him play in general?
Play until he finishes on a high note. Like, that's what I think is the most important thing heading into the regular season. Send him out with some confidence. You know, obviously, you don't, if he's really struggling, you don't want to keep just throwing him back out there. But let's say the plan is 3 drives. But if on the 2nd drive, he goes out and leads a touchdown drive, like a 9-play, 80-yard touchdown drive, pull him. There's no point in sending him back out there. So I just want to see some consistency, get one good drive on Friday night, and pack it up and head to Denver. Like, that's all you need.
Especially if he does it against Brian Flores' defense, who's going to throw the entire kitchen sink at him. I'm sure Minnesota's going to have more starters playing since it's the last preseason game, and you want to get him some reps. We'll see what happens. But if Cam Ward leads a touchdown drive against the Vikings' defense, Titans fans are going to go crazy.
I agree. I also wonder if he will see any starters. And that, I mean, it's... It concerns you a little bit.
Surely
of like,
you'll see some, right?
I don't know. Like, the preseason has become so random. Like, it just depends on the team. Some teams, like Joe Burrow, seemingly plays 3 drives in every single game when he probably doesn't need to. But I don't know if the Vikings are a team that's going to run everybody out there. We'll see. 7829 talking about the throw to Van Jefferson, saying incomplete, but that was a dot. Y'all are nuts. Keep saying that throw wasn't awesome to Van. It was awesome.
It was an absolute seed.
It was a great throw.
It was great.
The end zone camera shows you that he put it in a great spot, but it's not like it would have been a tough catch to make.
But you got to catch it. That's
right.
The point.
And
yeah.
I'm not blaming Cam Ward's throw. I'm not saying that, man, it wasn't good enough from Cam Ward. He thread the needle. He put it in a place where his guy could go get it, and he didn't. That's on Van Jefferson. I'm just saying, like, let's not act like that ball hit Van Jefferson right on the money. Like, it wasn't an easy catch to make, but it was about as good as you could do from right there. Like, that is about as good a throw as you can make from Cam Ward. But also, you have to understand, it wasn't like it was dropped in the bucket, easy catch for Van Jefferson. It would have taken a little extra effort. Justin asks, have the Titans said if Ridley or more of the starters are going to play in this next game? No, they have not. I would hope that they're going to have the starters on offense play as long as Cam Ward does. You know the offensive line is going to play as long as Cam Ward's out there. And I didn't mention this earlier when we were talking about Dan Moore and how I thought they were insane to send Cam Ward out there without Dan Moore. Watching that replay of Dan Moore getting rolled up on, he got really, really lucky. Like, really, really lucky.
That's the thing with those ankle injuries. I mean, sometimes you just get so lucky, and sometimes it's just...
Well, I mean, I was watching the replay, and at that point, we didn't really know if Dan Moore was actually hurt or not. He was walking off, which was a good sign, but I'm watching, and I see the big defensive tackle in slow motion just falling towards Dan Moore's flexed leg on the ground. I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, that could have been
so much worse.
That could have been a broken leg. It could have been a broken ankle. It could have been an ACL. But Dan Moore slid his leg out at the last second and just rolled it up a little bit. Got very lucky, because if Dan Moore goes out, Cam Ward is going to be running for his life. Not that Dan Moore is Trent Williams, but Dan Moore is a serviceable left tackle. He's been a starting left tackle for 4 straight years. If you lose him, whew, they would have been in trouble. So watching that replay, Dan Moore, I don't know if it was just luck or if he felt somebody falling, but he snuck his leg out at the very last second before he would have been seriously injured.
Can you imagine the conversation we'd be having if Dan Moore was seriously injured?
Yeah, I mean, that's at the point where it's like, do you bubble wrap Cam Ward for his rookie season and just try and wait?
I'm so thankful we're not having that conversation today.
Me too. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you have thoughts, we'd love to hear from you. You can text or call our phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 30 minutes left in the show. Chase and Big Joe coming up at the top of the hour. I want to flip back over to the defensive side of the ball. I have some concerns, but I don't know if I'm waving any red flags yet. We'll talk about that coming up next. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you for just under 30 more minutes. Chase and Big Joe coming up at the top of the hour. It is a Titans reaction Monday. Titans beating the Falcons in preseason game number 2 on Friday night. One more in the preseason this Friday, right over at Nissan Stadium, before the regular season gets underway September 7th in Denver against the Broncos. I had a thought on the Titans' defense, and I don't want to wave any red flags because the Titans' defense is missing their two best run defenders, Jeffrey Simmons, Tavondre Sweat. And Cody Barton hasn't played a whole lot in the preseason either, but man, has the run defense been bad. I mean, they gave up 180 yards to Tampa on last Saturday, and Sean Tucker was pleased with his performance coming out of Syracuse. Parker, do you remember that when Sean Tucker was at Syracuse, he'd tweet that out every single week of like, this week I ran for 197 yards and 2 touchdowns. I was pleased with my performance as Syracuse got the win. Like, he's a character. But he ran like he was, it looked like he was back at Syracuse as they ran for 180 yards against the Titans in week 1 the preseason. It was better overall on Friday night against Atlanta, but like that long touchdown, it looked like the linebackers both should have been there and they both shot the wrong gap and running back slips through, outruns everybody to the end zone. I'm a little bit concerned about the run defense. Not that I thought the Titans' run defense was going to be elite. Although, was it Robbie, I know, keeps tweeting out about how the Titans coaching staff keeps talking to Charles Davis and saying no one's going to run on the Tennessee Titans this year. So I don't know if I should be concerned about it because, again, the best players that the Titans have against the run haven't been on the field. And this defense looks a whole lot different with Jeffrey Simmons and Tavondre Sweat in the middle of the line. But it is a little bit concerning that the depth has been so bad at stopping the run over the last couple of weeks. I mean, I don't know if we're going to see Sweat at all this week. You can make the assumption Jeffrey Simmons is not going to play at all in the preseason. They need Tavondre Sweat to get healthy, though. And I know it's his tonsils, so like I would guess that it's probably not going to linger too much longer, but he needs to get back out on the practice field and on the field in the preseason. 3337 on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, still waiting for you guys to break the Trey Hendrickson to the Titans news. I can pretty much without a shadow of the doubt say it's not going to happen.
We're not
going
to talk about it because it's not going to happen.
Right. I told Parker before we went on the air that I purposefully did not put Trey Hendrickson on here because it would make absolutely no sense for the Titans to trade for Trey Hendrickson. Trey Hendrickson is a move you make if you feel like you are a Trey Hendrickson away from being a Super Bowl contender, like the Bills or the Ravens or maybe even a team in the NFC like the Commanders or the 49ers if they're trying to get one last run out of that group that they've got over there. Like, that would be a team that it would make sense. And it was funny because I saw Jordan Schultz report that the three teams that are most closely linked to Trey Hendrickson were the Panthers, Colts, and Browns. I'm like, not one of those teams would make sense to go get Trey Hendrickson.
A Super Bowl contender needs to go get Trey Hendrickson.
Right. Like, all three of those teams have so many holes. Yeah, the Lions would be perfect to go get Trey Hendrickson. Go all in and give up the picks to go get a shot at a Super Bowl. Like, I know it didn't work out, but when the Titans traded for Julio Jones, they felt they were a Julio Jones away from being a Super Bowl contender. And he wasn't great, but they were the number one seed in the AFC that year. it made sense to go spend a second round pick to go get Julio Jones when they made that trade. But as a team that, you know, your own front office is laughing at the idea of you going and having a chance to win the Super Bowl, like, they are not one player away. You don't need to give up those picks, because those picks are going to be important in you building up this roster to where they can be competitive again. Those picks are way more valuable to the Titans right now than Trey Hendrickson would be.
And not to mention, the asking price right now per Diana Rossini is a young defensive player and a 2026 first-round pick.
Yeah.
How much more years does Trey Hendrickson have in his prime? It just does not make sense for the Titans to go out and give up that much capital for a team that's rebuilding. Trey Hendrickson's not going to win here in Tennessee for how many years? What, one, two, three, maybe years left in his prime? Not going to happen.
You just made the L'Jarius Sneed trade, and it blew up in your face, at least so far. I'm not going to completely give up hope. There's still like a 5% chance in my mind that L'Jarius Sneed ends up being a decent player for this team.
I said, like, if he can just come back and play top 15 caliber football for a corner, that helps the team out tremendously.
Even top 30. Just go be serviceable, man.
Go be
a starting level cornerback, and it at least looks better. But even if L'Jarius Sneed does come back and he is a serviceable starting level cornerback, is he going to be on the team when this team goes back to the playoffs? I would almost guarantee no.
It'd be hard for me to say yes.
I don't see any path where he is a winning piece of a team that goes to the playoffs. That would be what Trey Hendrickson is. Yeah, it might make this team a little bit easier to watch this year, and maybe it wins you a game
this year. In the immediate future.
But what is winning six games versus five games do for you when your roster, as it's constructed, is not good enough to go make the playoffs right now? And by the time you're good enough, maybe Trey Hendrickson is still on that team, but is he worth whatever contract you're going to give him at that point? Absolutely not.
No, and imagine Trey Hendrickson in Detroit, a team that is ready to win right now, needed some help on the defensive line with all the injuries. They get Aiden Hutchinson back, and on the opposite side, you have Trey Hendrickson. Can you imagine that?
Right. That's a team that it would make sense for. Like 3337, he responds, he's the best pass rusher in the NFL. First of all, he had the most sacks in the NFL last year.
Best pass rusher.
I would say, like, in terms of if you had to pick one guy to go get a sack, I don't think Trey Hendrickson would be that guy. But does the best pass rusher in the NFL help you make any meaningful difference this year? Like, Trey Hendrickson, as good of a player as he is not worth three wins this year. Maybe he's worth one. And unless he's going to be a piece that pulls you into the playoffs, it's not worth it.
And do you think Trey Hendrickson would want to leave Cincinnati, who is a fringe playoff, or was a fringe playoff team last year, but when they put it all together, they've been to a Super Bowl? Do you think he'd want to come to Tennessee? Because I don't think so. I have a hard time believing that.
No. I think Hendrickson, the reason he wants to leave, first of all, the Bengals are cheap and won't pay him. But, like, they also, he wants to go compete for a Super Bowl.
And they don't care about their defense, apparently.
Yes.
So.
Mike on our text line says, we shouldn't trade for Trey Hendrickson. For one reason, we need the picks. End of discussion there. You lose credibility when you throw up the L'Jarius Sneed trade. The Sneed trade shouldn't have been made due to his history. The two things are not connected. But it is. Like, it's a similar situation where just because a good player is available doesn't mean that you should go trade for them. Like, you have to take a long, hard look at your team and say, does this player make a meaningful difference for us? And during that offseason, I think if Rand Carthon had taken a long, hard look at his team and said, hey, is L'Jarius Sneed the difference between us winning the division and not winning the division? The answer is probably no. And they tried to sell the team as more than it was, and it ended up blowing up in their faces. Like, I think making the Hendrickson trade would be very similar to making the L'Jarius Sneed trade. Even if Hendrickson ends up being a better player for wherever he goes, it would make the same amount of sense. 3337 says it helps you get a year better and get into the new stadium. I mean, that's kind of what I'm thinking, is that they're trying to build for the new stadium.
This team is focused on the future and the long term.
Right.
They're not focused on right now.
Trey Hendrickson is not going to be a star pass rusher when that new stadium opens up. Or if he is still a 10-sack-a-year guy, it would be his final year as that kind of player. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you have any final thoughts, last call for phones here on the program. Chase and Big Joe are coming up at the top of the hour. We'll wrap up our thoughts on the Titans preseason game. A couple other odds and ends we haven't gotten to yet. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up here on 1025 The Game. Final segment on this Monday, next man up, 1025 The Game. Chase and Big Joe coming up right after us here on the station. Tomorrow, Nick Fraser going to join me for most of the show. And Jeff Hem from the Nashville Sounds going to join for an hour starting at 10:30. So should be a fun show tomorrow. Titans will also be on the practice field. Should be able to carry Brian Callahan's press conference before practice tomorrow as we still await some updates from what's going on there out at Ascension St. Thomas Sports Park. And actually, we might have just gotten some. Yep, here are Teron Davenport's training camp notes for today. Perfect timing just before we wrapped up the show. Jalen Harrell returned to practice. No Tavondre Sweat, no Kevin Winston Jr. Little bit worried about Tavondre Sweat missing most of his second training camp. Lloyd Cushenberry did take part in the 9v7 period, so that's good. Ward with a couple of nice throws to Tyler Lockett and Bryce Oliver. Looking to see if there's any other noticeable things. J.C. Latham had a couple of good reps against Draymond Jones. Femi Oladejo with a good rep against Jalen Duncan. Oh, Jeffrey Simmons and Cam Ward got into it, apparently, again. Cam Ward hit Ridley for a touchdown. Ward was going to Ridley and walked by Simmons, who put his hands on him, and it caused a scuffle. Simmons was running hot from the previous play. Okay, so interesting. Oh, I guess J.C. Latham got a good block on Jeffrey Simmons, and Julius Chestnut got a touchdown. Latham let Simmons know about it. So Jeffrey Simmons, as he does, is a disruptor. But it does seem like, just based on those two tweets from Jeffrey Simmons, or from Teron Davenport, it seems like some juice today. Seems like Cam Ward looked pretty good. In fact, actually, Ward did have a four-play incompletion streak, but he did get a shot to lock it across the middle. So we'll continue to get some updates from out there at Ascension St. Thomas Sports Park, and I'm sure that Chase and Big Joe will have some updates today. But yeah, Cam Ward and Jeffrey Simmons getting into it. They've talked so much about their trash talking, and I guess it boiled over today in their first intra-squad practice in almost 2 weeks.
This will be a constant theme between the two of them. Just right. Their competitive nature. This is going to be an ongoing thing.
No, I'm not concerned at all about it. I mean, they've talked about it. They went fishing, and it seems like they're good friends. But those are two competitors out on the field, and I guess they got into it today after Cam Ward hit Calvin Ridley for a touchdown. A couple of other things from the Titans preseason game. Did want to mention Joey Sly missing the extra point. I'm not worried about Joey Sly yet, but
I'm not either.
You did, as an organization, you traded out the consistent but safe player in Nick Folk, who was a guy like, if you're inside of 50 yards, 98% of the time he's going to hit it, and you felt good about that. Joey Sly's the opposite of like, hey, you got a chance that he's going to hit some 60 to 65 yarders, but he might miss a 37 yarder every once in a while or miss an extra point. Yep. So you got to take the good with the bad. We'll see what he looks like in the regular season, but I don't think the Titans are going to be making any changes at kicker quite yet.
He may be built like a linebacker, but
it's a big guy.
So also the Johnny Hecker front, a lot of people were freaking out about that. The reason he was brought in, at least my impression was, Ryan Stonehouse kind of struggled with his hang time, which resulted in a kind of being right. A disadvantage for the defense in terms of yardage where the offense was. Johnny Hecker, I believe, was brought in because his hang time was so good.
Yes.
And that would give the return unit or the punt unit an opportunity to get down the field and limit a big return.
It is funny that the Titans change out their special teams coordinator. You bring in experienced Bones Fossil to take over for Colt Anderson, and they completely changed their philosophy at both kicker and punter. Like, Stonehouse was your all or nothing. He's going to kick it 70 yards, but he might give up a 30-yard return. Whereas Hecker is your ultimate net punt guy. Like, it may not go the furthest, but he's going to set up his guys and his coverage unit to be able to make a play. And then you went the opposite way on kicker. So it is funny. They flipped it. Hecker hasn't looked great, but I heard Corey Curtis talking with Robbie and Connor on the way in here about how, you know, he's got 10 years of 42-plus net punting. No one else has ever done that. Let's not freak out about a couple of bad practices and bad preseason games. Again, a lot being made of the Ward and Simmons scrum, I guess they could say. Ward shoved Jeffrey Simmons. Simmons went back at him. Mostly playful is what Paul Kaharsky is reporting, but he said Simmons ended up with his helmet off. So Titans bringing some juice in their first practice back in Nashville since, what, Wednesday, August 7th? So, yeah, almost 2 weeks, week and a half, they are finally back in Nashville and practicing out there. So getting updates from there. Again, Chase and Big Joe will have some thoughts. Texter on our text line, Ron from Franklin says, you sure kept to your plan not to talk about Trey Hendrickson. Yeah, it was my initial plan, but we got the text, ended up getting into it. But for Titans fans out there hoping for Trey Hendrickson, I would you know, not get your hopes too high.
Let's put those ideas to rest, please.
Don't think it's
please.
Going to happen. Couple more thoughts on the Titans game. I had one more that I wanted to get to. Femi Oladejo. We touched on him for a second there before Joseph Newgarden came in. But I did like what we saw from Femi Oladejo. He had the one play where he didn't set the edge on the jet sweep. And as a former inside linebacker, I wasn't thrilled with that. But he had the nice chase down tackle for loss right before the Kendall Brooks pick six. And I thought he had a few good pass rush reps. He didn't get a sack, but I thought that he flashed more than he did against Tampa, which that was what we were asking for. Against Tampa, he was kind of a no-show. And as a edge rusher picked in the second round with a lot of high hopes, you don't want to disappear in a game against backups. And I didn't think he disappeared on Friday night, which is a step in the right direction. Obviously, you want more, but I do think it was a step forward for Femi Oladejo in his development.
Yeah, and what I was telling Connor and Nick on the weekend show, he's still, I mean, think about it. This guy has not played edge rusher for an entire calendar year, and people are freaking out. And yes, he was a second-round pick. I understand that, but he's so raw and he's so green of a prospect, it's going to take a while. And not to mention, Denard Wilson has spoken on this several times. They're throwing the kitchen sink at him. They're having him go out in coverage. They're having him set the edge on the run, rush the passer, all of it. And they're just trying to see what sticks. So if there is some bumps along the way, I think it's completely normal.
I agree. And I think when you took Femi Oladejo, you knew that this wasn't going to be an instant impact guy. Like, this is not Abdul Carter, who Abdul Carter got thrown around on, was that Saturday night against the Giants? Did you see, or against the Jets? Did you see this?
Yes.
He got chipped by the tight end and kind of thrown in the air. And as he tried to get back up, the right tackle sent him right back to the ground.
Yep.
again, it's one rep, but Abdul Carter will probably be a pretty instant impact guy for the Giants. Femi's not going to be that, but you want to see the development. Game two is better than game one. That's pretty much all you can ask for. That's going to just about wrap things up for us here on the program. Fun Monday show. Had Joseph Newgarden in. Again, the Borchetta Bourbon Music City Grand Prix coming up Labor Day weekend, Saturday and Sunday, August 30th and 31st. Make sure you go check that out as Joseph Newgarden looks for his first win in his hometown. Lots of Titans talk. Again, tomorrow, Nick Frazier going to join us for most of the show. Jeff Hamm going to be with us for an hour to talk sounds as the Sounds start a new series here in the Music City coming up tomorrow. For Parker Kelly, I'm Jake Lyman, signing off here on this Monday. Chase and Big Joe coming up next. You're on 102.5 The Game.